Okay, Ajouta Vach Rabbeisai. Ajouta Vach. As I thought, as I was thinking about the subject that I want to talk about today, so it just kept mushrooming in my mind. It's a very, very.
The volume is very low.
Volume is low. Just for a moment.
Join us here.
Give me a minute. Is this better?
Much, much better. Thank you.
Okay. So as I began thinking about the subject, it just kept mushrooming. So it really deserves, let's say, if we can get in 10 shiur in between now and Lag BaOmer. I don't think we're going to manage that. What's that? So I really have no idea what we're going to get to today. Let's see. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer is a little bit of a mysterious day. We find two themes emphasized when it comes to Lag BaOmer, right? We have the probably, perhaps, practically in just everyday life, probably the Hilul of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai just gets more expression in terms of the celebration. While in Halacha, just going, it's barely mentioned. And what is mentioned is that's the day that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. There was this plague. And this is the day that Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. So, if you'll allow me to try to approach the latter in a bit of a, if you will, something of a Litvisha way, just to try to appreciate what is that aspect of celebration, especially since it's very strange at first glance, very strange. What do we say? Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 Talmidim who all were nifter in that very short period. A terrible plague. They were all nifter in that very short period, right? And then Haya Ha'olam Shameng, the world was basically desolate, meaning you're talking about the whole center of Torah basically ceased to exist. Until Rabbi Akiva restarted with those five Talmidim, right, who then became the superstars in the Mishnah. So what does that mean exactly? So it was the day they stopped dying, meaning on that day, number 23,999, and number 24,000 went iftar. There's nobody left to die. So nobody's dying anymore. So we celebrate. What's that supposed to mean? What does that mean? Like they finished dying. So there are different explanations that are given. There are different explanations that are given. And one of the explanations is that we're actually celebrating kind of the other way around. The Gezeirah was over. And at this point, the tradition of Torah was able to restart, meaning we're celebrating the fact that it's kind of like a certain solemn celebration. That's why in actual halacha, the Hilul of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is a different aspect of it, and that is really where you have that great simcha. But in terms of this aspect, simply as it's stated in halacha of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying, it's like very, it's kind of like toned down. It says, Mavim by Simcha Ktsas, it's not a very big pronounced simcha. It seems like it's a more solemn kind of simcha, an appreciation of the fact that Hashem was not going to allow the tradition to stop. And after, although we went through that loss, the Masayres, the transmission continued through these five Talmud. Now, Chazal tell us that it wasn't just that there was a Magefa, there was a reason for the Magefa. Chazal identified, right? Shalei Nagu Kavod Zevizeh. They did not treat each other with enough Kavod. Now, specifically using the word Kavod, I don't want to use any English word. Why? Because as we'll see soon, Kavod is something that has to be very profoundly understood. It's a confusing subject, and it has to be understood. And when we'll understand it, perhaps we'll understand that it's very hard to really put an English word to it. Whatever the case is, Rav Avigdor Miller always used to stress, don't think that these people were rude to each other. Don't think that they didn't know how to act like mention. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a lack in this very sublime concept called covet. But we'll get to that. We're putting that off for now. And we'll see how covet is so central to our lives, to our thinking, to our experience of life. We'll see. But right now, back to this inyan, the celebration, if you will. So there's another certain solemn aspect to it, and that is that Rabbi Akiva was one of the very brightly shining stars in the chain of the transmission of Torah from one generation to the next. Now, we have to appreciate that Torah, this is also something I hope I'm not going to get tempted to go off on tangents now, and the whole shir is already compounded with tangents. But the Hashem set the Torah up that it is not meant to be something that you simply go back to the texts on your own and take it from there. We have Torah Shebiksav, Torah Shebaal Peh, and Torah Shebaal Peh is a very fundamental part of really connecting to Torah, right? It has to be the Torah that was given at Sinai has to be transmitted to us through a live chain. The Lashon of the Chazon Ish is, the Chazon Ish writes, Ein lanu chachma, elim ken ava eleinu derech chacham chai. Our chachma has to be chachma that was transmitted to us through a live chachma. Big subject, a lot to learn as far as that goes, but I'm overcoming the temptation to really get into that now. Well, whatever the case is, the Torah is meant to be given over through live chachamim, right? One generation to them, sorry?
As opposed to Sfarim, you're saying?
Yes.
Adam Chai is opposed to Sfarim.
As opposed to Sfarim. Now, by today, we certainly use Sfarim as a major crutch, right? But initially, the way it was set up was that, not just that, the Gemaras weren't meant to be committed to writing at all, right? You know that there was supposed to be Torah Shebiksav, which is a very, very basic skeletal presentation of Torah, very inadequate in terms of applying it to life. That's, it was specifically set up that way. It's a certain core, it's a basis. And then you need, by definition, you need a lot of added human interpretation, which is going already back from the Midbar all the way down to our times. By now, most of that is in Sfarim. But it wasn't meant to be that way. It was meant to all be given over orally, right? You know that really there's a halacha that oral Torah is not meant to be written down at all. All the Gemara is really meant to be studied Baal Peh, right? It's beyond us, and that's why we have it written down today. But in earlier times, up until the time that capacities shriveled too much, it was all given over live. They worked with the Torah Shebiksav as a very basic baseline, but it was all given over live. Now, today, again, we need to use Sfarim much, much, much more. We can't operate that way. We don't have that capacity. But we still have to appreciate the role of the live chachamim from one generation to the next, who constitute very, very fundamental pieces in us getting the Torah the way we're meant to get it. That's why sometimes you see people who, this temptation to go straight back to biblical times and reface, you know, the way things are supposed to look from there, it's really missing the mark in a big way. Again, it gets people onto very, very wrong tracks. The Torah has to be lived the way it was funneled down to us, generation to generation to generation.
Question. So what if they all got wiped out, all of its students, and there was no life?
Oh, so here's where we come back to the celebration of Lag BaOmer. This is really the point. This is what we're celebrating. We're celebrating the fact, and it's particularly appropriate in the days of Sfiras HaOmer, when we are, which is a build-up toward Matan Torah, when we celebrate getting the Luchos at Har Sinai. So intertwined in that is celebrating the transmission of Torah Shebaal Peh. And therefore, it's a very, very big celebration. The fact that Hashem made sure, even though those 24,000 were wiped out, with five people, the Maseiro was able to be continued in such a profound, comprehensive way. But there's another point there. And like I said, this is a solemn celebration. It was a tragic time, right? And that's why we have various minhagim of mourning in these times. But there's another point that's being made here. Again, this is a sober point, which we have to be taking with us as we approach Matan Torah. By the way, I'll also just throw in that's why Pirkei Avos features, right, the special inyan of Pirkei Avos being stressed in the days between, because we're bringing in our great Rebbes from all the generations. When we're leading up to Har Sinai, we say we go to Har Sinai, we're not just approaching, okay, we're ready to, you know, reinvent the wheel. We're going to get the Torah and B'Ksav and take it out. We go to Har Sinai with Moshe Kibbutz Tarmi, Sinai, Sol Yisrael, Iskanim, and Nevi'im, you know, Anshikin, Sagdil, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the way down. But we're celebrating another point. Torah is not, when we talk about this live transmission, part of the idea is not just the information. Right? It's not just the information. The whole time now, I'm just sharing with you a struggle that I'm contending with from one moment to the next, and that is the whole time I'm being pulled, I don't know, by Yitzhara, to go off in all kinds of tangents, and I'm really trying hard to just stay focused and move along. But we're not talking about conveying information. IQ is not enough. A great mind is not enough for a person to really establish himself as one of the links in that chain. Part of what we're meant to be learning is how Torah translates into practice, what it actually looks like. And that is something that encompasses all of life. That's why the Chachamim tell us that you want not just to learn the information that Rebbe is giving over, but you want to be exposed to the Rebbe. You want to see the way he lives his life, the way these values actually translate. And that's why also, like we said, intellect, a great mind is not enough. This has to be a person who's living it. This has to be a person who all the values that a Talmud can come and absorb them from him and use him as a role model, not just in terms of getting the information, but in the way it's meant to be lived. Now, no two people are alike. And on the contrary, it's part of the greatness of Torah. Different aspects of greatness will come through different people. There will be different tzaddikim, different gedolim, different chachamim, who will be bringing out different areas of greatness. And that's all part of the beauty of it. And that's all part of the way it was meant to be set up. So here is where we come back to what I keep referring to as a certain, it's scary to say it this way, but Hashem was conveying a certain message. When we talk about the transmission of Torah, we're talking about the Torah itself being over in a very firm setting of Yiras Shamayim, of Midas, of Ben Adam Lachaveroi, of meticulousness, of taking all aspects of Torah seriously. This is where we want to be getting it from. And Hashem was conveying a certain lesson here. You can have a massive yeshiva of 24,000. But if the full picture is not going to be given over properly, those 24,000 will be moved off the chain and it'll be replaced with five people who are capable of giving over the whole picture as it ought to be given over. Now, this doesn't mean that the Chachamim of our times are going to be at the same level of the Tanaim, and the Tanaim weren't at the same level of the great people from the time of the Bayis Rishon, and they weren't at the same level of the Shoftim, etc. But yes, capacity diminishes. The standards of our times are not the same as they were in earlier times. But nevertheless, what does remain is the individual who is working on all areas, who doesn't say, well, that area of Torah is not for me. And on the contrary, what you're giving over to the Talmidim is how you're working in all those areas. If you failed in certain areas and you're giving over the struggle, right? I'm working hard, but I'm not letting go of any area. Tefillah is important, and Ben Adam L'Chaveiro is important, Midas is important. I want to be able to really live all the different areas of Torah. And if there was a situation where there was one area that was being neglected, according to their level, we have to keep stressing, it's scary to talk about the so-called failings of the great people of earlier times. But Chazal gave us a lesson for us to learn according to our level. And that is that if it's not going to be given over In the full picture, Hashem says, I'm going to have to replace it with something else, even if it's going to be of a much lower quantity. But the siyata d'shmaya of the transmission of Torah will be able to come through just as greatly through these five as through the 40,000. So it's a solemn celebration. It's a sober celebration, but it's part of the understanding that we're taking to us as we're approaching Matan Torah.
If each person is supposed to have a Rebbe, and now you're reduced to five, and in our generation, how many are there? I mean, how does each person find such...
How do we do that today? How do we do that today? So let's understand something. Like I said before, it used to be in earlier times, the setup was such that there was no Torah Shebe, Shebal Peh written down. You had to get it from Rebbeim, and there were a lot of them. If Hashem brought it to a situation in history, and this is something that's important to stress whenever we talk about our standing in history, we are on a much lower level than the generations that preceded us. That's also something that deserves elaboration. It's important to define it well. It's important to understand it. But what often happens is we hear this all the time, that we are a lowly generation. And what often happens is that it comes across as like banging us over the head. Look what a lousy generation we are. Now, we didn't set it up that way, right? Nobody here decided, you know what, let's take our generation and take it down 20 notches. Hashem guides the course of history. He has a plan for each generation. He has what he wants from them. So we don't have to beat ourselves up or even fret over the fact that we're in a lower place. It's important to understand that in order to have a proper perspective on the people who preceded us, on the earlier generations, but then to appreciate what our role is there. It requires a certain humility toward the earlier generations, a certain submissiveness toward them, being receptive to their messages rather than thinking that we can figure it out ourselves. It's very, very fundamental for a true life of Torah. But it's certainly not about beating ourselves up. It's not a criticism of us, the fact that we were born into this is Hashem guiding history. So this is also true for this aspect of yes, we use farim today. Chazal saw that as a certain drop in the way things were supposed to be. Okay, fine. But you know what? So we say you try to use farim that are going to introduce you to those standards. You try to use whatever means are available to you to be learning. This is all that Hashem expects. And at the same time, to also appreciate the value of having in your life, to whatever level you can. Again, we don't all have the opportunity to go knocking at the famous greats and saying, okay, I want to have a day-to-day relationship with you, and I want my children to be growing up in your shadow. Whatever extent you can connect yourself, and by the way, you also don't have to go, sometimes people think, okay, there are the five famous top names, and other than that, you know, okay, so... But to whatever extent you can have in your lives, whether to more degrees, less degrees, whatever is practically possible, live chachamim from our generation, not to fall into the trap of saying, if I would have lived back then, right? Not to fall into that trap, to appreciate that there are people who can serve as role models, people who we can be mekabel from, and to be a part of that, to realize that in the days of the Chafetz Chaim also, they were saying, Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, that was greatness. Right? And in his day, they said the same thing. Rabbi Akiva Eiger, that was greatness. Okay. So we'll kind of call that the end of the first part of what we want to talk about today. It's as far as Lag BaOmer goes. And appreciating this aspect of Kabbalah Satorah as in being mekabel the transmission, not just the luchas as they were given, Karaite style. Now let's get on to the aspect of the covet. And this is, I would call this the bigger subject. The bigger and all-encompassing subject. Covet is a very confusing thing. Is covet good or is covet bad? There are very explicit sources making it very, very clear this and that. Right? Envy and lust and covet, right? The desire for covet knock you clear out of both worlds, right? So if so, you certainly should not be mechabed people. Don't be mechabed people because you're putting a pitfall for them. You know, also, you find the kavod habriyos, human dignity carries so much weight in halacha, right? All kinds of different kulas are given in dinim derabbanon because this will compromise human dignity. Here it's important to uphold human dignity. Why should we be upholding it? On the contrary, it's better for the person not to have kavod and to be disgraced. That's much better for his spiritual health. We're told, you have to relate to your Talmidim the way, with the kind of kavod you would want for yourself. And you have to relate to your colleagues, to your equals, with the type of kavod that's warranted to your Rebbe. And your Rebbe, you should see that, right? Kavod. The stress that's put on relating to other people with kavod. Why should I be doing that? I'm just tripping them up. Tell them kavod is something terrible. So we have to appreciate that the obvious answer is that there's real kavod and there's fake kavod. But let's appreciate what real kavod is. Fake kavod, I don't have to spend much time on. It means I want everybody around me to recognize me, and my own sense of myself basically is drawn from what everybody around me thinks of me. That's fake kavod, and that's the kavod that we're talking about when we are disparaging kavod. But what is real kavod? What is real kavod? So bear with me. I hope that I'm not going to be getting a little too abstract now, but I want to try to really bring this out in a way that we can be living with it mamish 24/7. I'll approach it from two different angles. You know what they say, that one of the challenges of being a doctor is that, you know, that a conscientious doctor has to contend with is the natural gravitation toward, as you become exposed more and more to suffering, you become more and more accustomed to it and more numbed. And the challenge, and this is where you really see the greatness in a doctor, is the doctor is capable of holding on to that sensitivity. And every time he's facing a suffering person, to really be able to be fully compassionate and not to just get worn down by the again and again and again and again, right? Now, let's take that a very significant step further. Chafetz Chaim said, he made a strong statement. He said that a carpenter, by the nature of his trade, is always going to be stepping on sawdust. Right? Always going to be stepping on sawdust and chips of wood. A glazier is always going to be stepping on pieces of glass. And he said, a Rebbe is liable to always be stepping on a shabbos. He's not careful. Meaning, bringing home this point, that when a person is dealing with neshamas, when a person is dealing with as people at his disposal, people under his care, a lot of them, and the challenge is to be able to maintain a very, very profound sense of how special each one is. And not to let the fact that, you know, this is my 30th year on the job, and this is my, somebody else do the math, but whatever, 1,000th Talmud, and no, okay, kind of run of the mill. But now let's take it from a bane to ourselves. We are surrounded by people. We're surrounded by Bnei Yisrael. We're surrounded by Tzelem Elikim. We're surrounded by children of Hashem. The truth is, really, every time you're facing a fellow Jew in the street, you should start trembling from awe about what you're dealing with, about the magnitude of the person that you're facing, right? You should be walking on eggshells, that you're actually dealing with a neshama. You're dealing with a Tzelem Elikim. You're now facing somebody. If I were to tell you, to this person that you're about to be talking to, realize that Hashem is super focused on this person and wants to see how everybody around him is relating to him because of how much he cherishes this person, right? Now, all of a sudden, you come and you tell us, and you know what? That's how it is with every person in your life, every person that you're dealing with. It's too much for the human mind to grasp. We can't live with that. But you know what? To a large extent, that is the existence of a Ben Yisrael in Olam Hazeh. It's constantly dealing with things that are too much to grasp. And we're only human. And we can't be superhuman. But let's at least appreciate the concept. And as we'll actually discuss, it really starts with ourselves. It really starts with ourselves. I said I was going to approach it from two angles, but now I forgot the other angle. What's that?
You're only
human. I'm only, that's right. Thank you. I once had a, I was in yeshiva once, there was a, one of the, I once was exposed to a chash of a rabbi who was very demanding of his covenant. Very, very, first of all, he was like very meticulous in his dress, extremely particular. And a lot of, I'm not going to say it in English, we call it Hebrew ginonim. Like a lot of, like, you might say, like pomp in the way he conducted himself. And he demanded from the people around to relate in a certain way that, and I, like, it was initially like a little foreign to me. Like I more appreciated the more unassuming style, right? That was, and somebody, a friend of mine, pointed out to me something that just turned the whole picture around. Said to me, he said, when you think of a Balgaiva, what is a Balgaiva? A Balgaiva is a person who, I'm here and you're there, right? I'm here, I'm up here and you're down there. He said, regular person, we're both here. Okay, we're both here. He said, with this, well, he said, no, notice this. He considers himself here, and he also considers you here. Suddenly, he opened my eyes to the fact that he demanded a lot of covenant. He also related, and this is really something amazing. Afterwards, I was really able to study it and appreciate how he related to every young bacher with extreme deference, bringing out that understanding of that an adam is something much greater than we tend to usually think of. I was always very, very, I shouldn't say always, on the contrary. Like I grew up, you know, growing up in America, you know, Lag BaOmer here gets a lot more focus, right, than at least where I grew up in America. I mean, it's currently here, Lag BaOmer is like a big day. I went, like, growing up in America, I never actually came across Lag BaOmer songs. So I really heard them for the first time when I was already, there's a certain mile to that. When you become exposed to certain things, instead of hearing them from the earliest age, hear them at an age when they really strike you. So there's a line in one of the Lag BaOmer songs, Bar Yochai. You know the song Bar Yochai? Mm-hmm. So there's a line there that says, Nasa Odom Nema Avurech. And Hashem said, let us make man. It was you that he was pictured. In other words, man is not the most intelligent of beasts. Man is an immense bria, something that's very, very immense. When Hashem made man, he had a whole vision. He had a whole vision of what he was hoping for, of what man could really become. And when Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, looking at Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, he said, ah, that's the picture of man. That's the real man. That's the real Adam. The one who really justified that very, very high, awesome title of Adam. Now, what's covet? Excuse me if this is disjointed, but I'm going to try to bring it all back together as we go along. Covet doesn't mean talk nicely to somebody. Covet doesn't mean, you know, treat somebody with derech eretz. I'll give you a very mundane mashal of covet. Covet, again, excuse me if you get a little abstract, but bear with me. This is very, if we can really get through this and then bring it back home in a practical way, this will be very significant. Covet is related to the word kaved, weight, heaviness. What's the opposite of kavod? Kalon. Kalon is disgrace, which is related to the word kal. Light, easy to hold. What's the connection between kavod and heaviness? Is a boulder more respectable than a pillow? So let's note another piece. We talk about physical features. There's height, there's color, there's volume, there's quantity, there's weight. Weight is could be one of the most misleading ones. Height is very clear to see. Color, clear to see, right? But weight, let's say you have a box on the floor. You have a box on the floor. I come over, I try to pick it up. Nothing doing. The box doesn't budge. It's too heavy, right? It's okay. So now I get a little bit, okay, now I understand that I'm dealing with something a bit heavier. So I step back and I put both hands under and I heave. Nothing doing. Box is not budging. Okay, so I understand that there's a little more serious business here. I call somebody over. The two of us try to get it up. Nothing doing. Box doesn't budge. Okay, fine. I call eight guys. We all take off our jackets. We roll up our sleeves. We take a deep breath. Now, I've given the box its proper coven. Why? I'm relating to it with its true weight. Meaning, you just see the box there. Maybe you can just go try to flip it up like that. You're not according it its true weightiness. Even in English, it works that way, right? You talk about something significant as weighty. When I suddenly come now and say, okay, now I understand that there's a lot more here to what you just see when you see that box there. And I say, okay, no, it's going to take eight of us to really try to pick it up. Now I'm relating to its weight in the right way. Now there's no din, you know, you can disparage boxes. It's okay. There's no value in giving boxes kavod. But I'm just trying to bring out the concept. Kavod means relating to something with its due weight. And that's why the opposite of kavod is kal, right? I don't give it that weight. So let's say, for example, give a few examples of the concept. Have a Sefer Torah. Sefer Torah is written on cloth. Cloth, if you picture cloth in your mind, you probably do picture it as something beautiful, but that's because of the association, right? You've already come to get used to associating cloth with Kedusha. But if you just really picture, completely objectively, a piece of cloth, not something especially pretty, it's a rough piece of paper, right? And the sofer is going to, can actually be beautiful. But let's say you have a rolled up Sefer Torah. You're not really necessarily seeing something that really reflects the unbelievable Kedusha that's in it. What do we do with the Sefer Torah? We take a Sefer Torah and we put it in a fancy, beautiful mantle. Mantle has no shaykhis to the Sefer Torah itself, right? But what? The mantle is expressing the value of the Sefer Torah that doesn't meet the eye. Right? You look at the Sefer Torah, you don't see its true significance. You see a cloth. Now, Adarava, the fact that we already, by association, do see something beautiful in cloth is because of the fact that we've gained the mentality properly. This is what we're trying to do. We're trying to create a situation where we create association that causes us to relate to it right. But now you take a Sefer Torah, you put it in a beautiful mantle, and even that, you don't keep it on a shelf. You have a beautiful Aron Kodesh, right? It's usually closed. You don't even usually see the Sefer Torah. In fact, there are very severe halachas. You can't just move a Sefer Torah from one place to the other because you want to lay the Sefer Torah somewhere else one day. There's a lot of weight involved. This is how one day there's something going on in the house across the street. I want to be able to lay in the Sefer Torah there. You can't just bring the Sefer Torah from Shul and then bring it back. No. You can bring it the day before, settle it there, then you bring it back the day after. It has to be overnight. You can't just bounce the Sefer Torah around from place to place. All these things create an aura around the Sefer Torah. You have the Aron Kodesh. Inside the Aron Kodesh, you have the mantle. You have a beautiful Atzei Chaim. What are we doing? We are trying to relate to this Sefer Torah with the true glory that doesn't meet the eye. This is what covet is. When we take the means of finding the way, how can I relate to something with, as they say in English, English is actually kind of on target in our subject, due respect, right? Not undue, due respect, meaning that if I look at it, I don't necessarily see. So here, we come back to the subject of being mechabed other people. According to what we're saying now, we understand that being mechabed another person, let's talk about being mechabed a chacham. Kavod HaTorah. Now you have to be mechabed a Talmud Chacham. Disgracing a Talmud Chacham is one of the categories of an apikoros, right? And Kavod HaTorah is one of the most supreme values that we have, to be mechabed a Talmud Chacham. Now, is it, now we understand this is not about ben adam l'chaveiro. Is there a certain aspect behaving toward other people with derech eretz is ben adam l'chaveiro? But when we talk about being mechabed a Talmud Chacham, is it that, well, with what he's made out of himself, he deserves this treatment? It's not what it's about. In fact, he might not want the covenant. What is it about? It's about that in my own world, I want to create a reality where Ruchnius and Hashem's values are as tangible as I can make them. We live in a physical world. In a physical world, a movie star looks a lot more glorious than an old Talmud Chacham, and an old Tzadikus, right, was not dressed fashionably, and etc., right? There's a physical halo by the movie star, right? But we want to be living in a world where we are living the true values. How do we live those true values? How do we make them real for us? We make them real for us by according them, by doing whatever we can to create that aura for ourselves. We apply a lot of covenant. The truth is that we come back to that example that we gave before. Because we've been relating to Sifrei Torah with so much reverence for so many years, now when I do see a klaf, I actually do see it as something beautiful. Today, you can make a Judaica painting with a klaf. You don't have to put the mantle on, and it's something beautiful that people will hang on their walls. Why? Because we treated it with such deference for so long, it really became ingrained in the way we live it. So you have to realize that when you see a Sefer Torah and you naturally are relating to it with a certain awe, when you see a siddur on the floor and you are, let's say you see a siddur on the floor and you can't get to it. You can't get to it sitting on the floor next to you for 5 minutes. Are you going to feel like itchy, like something's wrong, like you can't really concentrate, you're distracted? Realize that that is a manifestation of your own Kedusha. Because you, through the halachas of externals, of the way you treat a sefer, you've really changed your mentality into a mentality of where ruchnius is something very, very real and tangible. And therefore, it's not just that I realize that it shouldn't be on the floor, but now I know that I can't do anything about it, so it's fine. I can't do anything about it. Hashem's not going to have any tain on me, but I'm just distracted when there's a siddur on the floor. Realize that that is a manifestation of your own kedusha. So when we treat Talmid Chachamim with respect, you know what? The Talmid Chacham, for him, he might prefer that you don't. And you know what? It's part of his job as a Talmid Chacham. It's part of what he's contributing to us. But what he's contributing to us is an opportunity for us to say, to really, for ourselves, create a reality where we're living with the reality where Torah and greatness in Ruchnius is top in my mind. That's the whole concept of Hidur Mitzvah. Hidur Mitzvah is in order to give the value of mitzvahs tangible, physical, experiential reality in our lives. But this is all really just dancing around the main point. And the main point is that this is very much about us ourselves. We have to relate to ourselves with kavod also. True kavod, if you think that you're a complete nobody, then you're not relating to other people with kavod. You're relating to them with politeness, right? You're relating to them nicely. You're doing a mitzvah of ben adam l'chaveiro. But the truth is, you have to realize your own weight. You have to realize the immensity of what a ben Yisrael is. You have to realize that when Chazal say that bishvilin yachayev kol adam loyma bishvilin yivro ilo, Chazal say that every individual Jew has to say, Bishvili Nivra Olam, the entire world was created for me. What does that mean? What that means is you see an entire universe. Don't think, well, Hashem figured, I'm going to have a nation. Over the years, it's going to amount to, I don't know, however many billion Jews there were since we became an Am. Okay, that justifies the universe. You have to realize that's not Hashem's equation. Every neshama is something very, very specific and something that Hashem says, this justifies the universe in its own right. And Hashem would have made it a universe in its own right. Just what? Hashem has a plan. Part of Hashem's plan is that we should all be in the same universe and interacting with each other. That our plan in life is part of a bigger picture of how we all intertwine. But it's not because Hashem was trying to economize in universes. A universe really is small change relative to one neshama. You talk about, can you imagine if you go, you'll go to a one of these, you know, they sell these real diamonds, right? And they put it in this whole velvet case on a pillow and a whole setting. So we have a thing that you go into a place where they're dealing with heavy-duty gems and you'll hear the dealer saying, 1 minute, I don't want to give you 2 bags. Maybe we can get, you know, I know you're buying 2 gems here, but maybe we can get both of them into 1 bag. The bag is nothing, right? It's so insignificant compared to the gem. I mean, if it's a very fancy bag with, you know, with the rope handles, it's nothing. That's what a universe is relative to a Jewish neshama. And that's why we have many halachas that require us to preserve our own dignity. Right? The halachas of... we have another hour and a half? I think we have another minute and a half. But we have many halachas that require us to preserve our own dignity. There are halachas of how a person has to behave in the bathroom. There are halachas of how a person has to behave when eating. Hilchas derech eretz, hilchas suda, are not things about politeness. You're supposed to be mapping on these things when you're by yourself, right? What's wrong if, you know, I spent the morning learning, I davened a good mincha, and I'm going to sit down to lunch, nobody else is around, and I want to take in, you know, properly. No chatzitzes, no spoons, no anything. You know, I just want to go all the way, right? Can't do that. Why can't I do that? Because Hashem put many, many things into place to remind you of who you are. You are not the most intelligent of beasts. You are something immense that has a body. The body is not you. The body is a certain kli. It's a certain office. There are different ways of defining it. But you are not, you and the food are not really a shidduch. You can enjoy the food. Hashem wants you to enjoy the food, but not to throw yourself into it because it's not who you are. This is also why clothing is a lot more than covering, you know, making it tsanua. It's a lot more than that. Clothing is for us not to be misled by the impression that man really is just the most intelligent beast, right? For a man, I mean, there's not a real sneeze issue if I were to go without a shirt. But you know what? And if I look in the mirror, it might just make the impression of basically like a bald gorilla, right? But this is the point. You have to understand that when you're looking at yourself, when you're dealing with yourself, you're dealing with something much, much greater than you and you yourself can experience and can appreciate as long as you are locked into that body. And therefore, there are all kinds of halachas and dinim and mitzvahs in place to preserve your own chashivas for the purpose of the way you relate to yourself. That's really the point of these things. The way you relate to yourself. For you to have a proper appreciation of yourself in your own mind. And also, to whatever extent you can, the way you relate to the people around you by appreciating the greatness of what they are. This really is something that deserves a lot more time and a lot more elaboration. We've basically laid down mamish, not even the aleph base, the aleph of it.
Can you tell us what did they do wrong? Tell me that.
What did they do wrong?
How did they not treat each other?
So, no, I can't tell you, meaning I don't know exactly what it looked like. It could be anything from, you know, let me go to the other extreme. It's possible that all it was that in their own minds, they did not have the level of reverence that Hashem expected them to have. This is actually heard of each other. Of each other.
They didn't forgive the cover of each other's greatness.
What's that?
I heard years ago this year, they didn't forgive the cover of some of the other one's greatness.
Of the other one's greatness.
Like if somebody said a chiddush, I mean, you know, they couldn't forgive that somebody else could do something good. You know?
So that's the question. Exactly what was the degree of it? I don't know. It could be that it was that it actually manifested in a certain resistance to acknowledging the other person, but it also could be that it didn't. I don't know. It could be, you know, if you want to just come very pushy and say they mamish acted rudely to each other. I doubt it, but I don't know. It probably was more subtle along the lines that you're saying. And it could be that it was even more subtle than that, that they mamish treated each other with a lot of respect, but it was midin. Let me give this person a good feeling rather than I'm dealing with greatness. I'm dealing with something awesome because I'm dealing with another yid. I'm dealing with a tzelem elokim. I heard Rabbi Anasan Alperin on Shabbos suggested such an amazing insight that just fits so beautifully with this whole understanding. They said they didn't treat each other with the right covenant. Why didn't Rabbi Akiva tell them off? They had a very chosh of a Rabbi. And he showed examples of how Rabbi Akiva got very, very involved with all the nitty-gritty in life when he taught his Talmidim. Now, Alperin suggested that perhaps it was because of this. It was not something that could even be visible to the eye. It had to do with, it had to come afterwards, Chazal, with the Ruach HaKodesh, to tell us what the Taina was. But this is the understanding. The Kavod, when we're talking about Kavod, it means having a true appreciation for the weightiness of what a Tzelem Elokim is, what a Ben Yisrael is. And that's where Kavod becomes, I'm more important than you, and it's obviously not coming because of the Tzelem Elokim. Tzelem Elokim means I am something immensely great, I'm something immensely weighty, and you're something immensely weighty. Like we said before, we're human with human limitations. We won't be able to mamish relate with unbridled awe to all the people we're coming into contact with. But the more we can try to gain this mentality, and again, don't consider it wrong to start with yourself. If you're really able to relate to yourself this way, it will naturally come to other people. Put work into it also. But it really does start with ourselves. And this is kasher kavod. Kavod in who we really are is true kasher kavod. Question.
Could it be a failing on Rabbi Akiva's part that his Talmidim?
I don't know. Could it have been a failing on the part of the Rebbe? I don't know. I don't know. It's a question that I don't know.
That's what made their spin so much larger because he stood for the Hafla Recha Kamocha and his Talmidim didn't follow that.
Apparently.
Maybe they didn't think of themselves as so great, so therefore they couldn't forgive that.
This is mamish the point. That's right. To have real kavod for another person, you really do have to have. That's right. You have to have a true, deep appreciation of who yourself are. And that is not the gaida that we talk about as the bad meat, as the kavod we talk about as the bad meat. The kavod we talk about as the bad meat is that I want to be everything and you nothing. I want you to relate to me as so much greater. Okay, as I said, we began the subject.
How much can they extend themselves to the outside world, outside of yeshiva,
which is living in the also, a question that I can only guess, but don't know the answer to. It's a good question. It's a good question, and can perhaps also bears on this issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.